make it a session. It's a reschedule. It's calls with people on it, so we should be here at least right after we start.
All right, we are live, so we'll go ahead and start the city council work session for Tuesday, October 14th. So this meeting has been called to order. Moving on to item number two, topics of discussion. Our first topic of discussion is discuss the fire department restructure and staffing.
Mayor, I'll kick this off and look to Colleen to add a little bit more detail a little bit later on. But ultimately, Colleen, myself, and Chief Matt Conner, we've been discussing a restructure for a number of months now. As you all were aware, due to some staffing throughout the majority of this year, the discussions really were put on hold to bring to the City Council until the right time. Currently, we do have a vacant assistant fire chief position, and I've said this a couple times in recent months, but you know, with that vacant position, we can reassess how our department is structured right now from largely the upper leadership and admin staff standpoint, who are full-time employees. And in front of you this evening is a proposal to restructure the department a little bit. Really, all the tasks will continue to get done, but our proposal is to shift around what positions are doing those tasks. So currently we have a chief and assistant chief and then captain of administration. The proposal is to retitle really that assistant chief role and captain of administration into two different roles, one being a deputy chief of operations and logistics position. The operations aspect was, a portion of that was conducted by the assistant chief in the past, with the logistics and some operational stuff done by our captain of administration. So really looking at that position to bump it up a little bit, take on a few more tasks that the assistant chief was doing. And then we also envision this deputy chief of operations and logistics really serving as that acting chief should it ever be needed. Looking at the other role, just as our department continues to grow in size and call volume, we're really viewing a deputy chief of training position, a necessary position to really just focus on the training of the department, make sure the required annual training is happening, be there to assist our duty crews on maybe more specific items or individual firefighters as we see fit, or that need is there. With that, we did also attach a proposed rate schedule for the wages, and I guess I'll look to Colleen to kind of talk through how we approached that aspect of this restructure as well.
Yes, thank you, Brian, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So the attachment, you will see there's some black font and red font. The first square on the top is the position that Mr. Jason Sufka currently holds. He is currently the administrative captain of logistics. Proposed title is deputy chief of operations and logistics. This position is priced at 80% below our fire chief, which is an internal equity strategy that the city has used in other departments on pricing a job. I did run a salary survey, which came in higher. But we opted for this strategy to be consistent internally, and that is how we arrived at that wage scale. The assistant chief of operations and training, that was our former employee that is now departed from the city. This position would now become the deputy chief of training. We would conduct an internal recruitment within the fire department and external if needed. That's not anticipated. And that pay scale is 10% below the position above that I just described, the difference in pay being that this deputy chief of training would not serve as backup or second in command, and so it's priced 10% less. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions from the council. Chris?
It seems like we're making a big decision here, or we're being presented with something, but I don't see a big difference. We have two positions, and some duties are being moved back and forth, and I guess I'm not certain why it's coming to council, so maybe I need to have that explained to me. And if it's just job titles, then maybe I need to understand that, because then with the title, I think, comes the new wage. But can you maybe explain why this is in front of us?
Well, it is creation of two new positions that we haven't held before. And I guess maybe partly it's just to bring everybody into the loop, because it's been on hold for so long, and you may have had questions about it. So I'm not sure really quite how to answer your question, honestly, Councilmember Riley, but it is this overall savings. We feel like this is actually a really good structure change for aligning duties with the right people and efficiency. It will be about $10,000 savings as compared to what was budgeted for 2026.
Okay. Anybody else?
Sounds good.
Michael?
Sure. I like the plan. I think it's a good thing to do. I don't understand the savings, but...
It is there.
But in one case, we're going up 18%, in the other, we're dropping 5%. Depending where the steps are.
Sure, and that is part of the equation. Okay. It's where we anticipate the current employee to be placed, and where we anticipate, for lack of better words, worst case scenario, where the new employee would be placed.
Okay.
It has to do with that.
It has to do with steps. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Jan?
So, is this a new employee that was just asked for at the last budget meeting?
No.
So we're asking for another new employee?
No. We are asking to replace a vacant position.
Kristen?
I just want to say that whatever the fire department's asking for and that they feel they need, and how it's best, positioned for them to be able to accomplish their goals and serve our community, I think is the best way we should go about it. And I think you've presented a good case, and so I'm in support of this.
Anyone else? Thumbs up?
Consensus shows we'll move forward. Next steps would really be in the next meeting or two. I don't know exactly which one, but we would recognize officially the change in title to Mr. Sufka, who's currently employed with us, and then we would begin that recruitment for the deputy chief of training. And then that would come forward to you guys at a later date for final approval to hire. So.
Can I just ask for clarification on that point? As soon as HR can get this going, we would like to, the recruitment. So I just want to make sure that's okay to get started before the next meeting.
I think so. You're starting with internal recruitment? Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Good. All right. On to the second case. Review proposed restrictions on one side of public streets in Village of Sunfish Lake. We do have a couple residents here. While Administrator Hagen is going through the case, you guys had some handouts. You can take those and pass those out to the council if you'd like. Would you like to start?
I have the petition with the original.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This information is all in your case, but for the benefit of the residents in attendance, I'll just briefly summarize the background and kind of how we got to where we're at today. So in 2003, the City Council adopted a resolution approving the final plat for the Village of Sunfish Lakes. And at that time, those approvals were contingent on parking restrictions on one side of all 28-foot-wide public streets, both sides of the 20-foot-wide public street surrounding the green space west of Radium Street, and on both sides of all 24-foot wide private streets in the development. That resolution is attached to your case along with the city staff review letter and a copy of the Public Works Committee meeting minutes from February 2003 that walked through some of the details on why those restrictions were approved contingent, or why the resolution referenced those restrictions, parking restrictions. So after that was approved, for some reason, the streets were never signed with no parking restrictions, for whatever reason. Now, fast forward to today. This summer, just as a reminder, on Radium Street, which is along the east side of the public streets in that development, we reconstructed that street, removed the center median islands in that street, and so now that now has public parking available on both sides. So there is some additional parking available on that street. I just wanted to point that out. But recently, staff received some complaints or concerns from residents regarding overparking on the streets and some safety concerns with that. So staff researched the development and found this resolution that's attached to your case, along with the conditions of parking restrictions. So we then met as a staff, formulated a plan for which side of the streets to park or to sign as no parking. We looked at the two most recent developments we have, Riverstone North, which is down on the west side of the city, just at, west of Puma Street, north of Bunker Lake Boulevard, and then Riverstone South, again, just on the opposite side of Highway 10. And both of those developments were approved at 28-foot wide streets with parking restricted on one side for the same safety concerns and maintenance considerations. So using that, those as our template, if you will, we developed a plan that's also attached to your case showing parking restricted on one side. Primarily, that's the side of the street with mailboxes. That tends to be problematic for mail carriers when they do not get out of their vehicles and deliver mail if there's a vehicle parked in front of a mailbox. So that's really the side of the street we targeted. We also looked at fire hydrants, making sure those were accessible as well as driveways. So we came up with the plan that's shown on your case. We drafted a letter. We then ran that by Public Works Committee in September and got their feedback. They were generally in agreement with sending a letter out to the residents and moving forward with the plan. So the letters were mailed in September, late September. And after the letters were mailed, then we started to receive some feedback. I've received 4 emails and 1 phone call myself. Of those emails, 3 of the emails were opposed to the parking restrictions. One email was understood the safety concerns and just had a few questions. And then the phone call I received, that person was also opposed to the parking restrictions. So attached here on your case are the reasons why they primarily noted. Primarily a lack of available on-street parking, especially during holidays and for vendors. When vendors come out to do service, there were concerns that they'd have to park far away and wouldn't be able to effectively provide service to the residents. There's also concerns from some of the residents because they have multiple vehicles and aren't able to fit them all in the driveways at night. As a reminder, we do have 2 to 6 a.m. parking restrictions citywide all year long. And some of these property owners, when they moved in, they either didn't have a family or had young kids, and now these kids are of driving age. And so now a lot of these families have several vehicles, and they say they can't fit them in the driveways overnight. For the properties on the side of the street that have a sidewalk, they say they can only fit 1 car deep in the driveway before the bumper of the second vehicle would overhang the driveway or the sidewalk. And then also concerns with the green space west of Radium Street. I understand that that's used by many residents. It's kind of a local park, and that people will actually drive down there and park their car by that. So those were the main concerns that we heard from people who were opposed to the parking restrictions as planned. So what staff had planned was to give the residents a couple of weeks from the time we mailed the letters before we call Gopher State one call to start calling in utility locates. We need to do that to start installing the signs. And then the we also worked with Ramsey PD, who were going to give the any parking offenders, if they're going to issue anything, it would be a warning for the first 30 days, unless they were repeat offenders, and then they would move on to full enforcement after that. Just in your case, just listed a little bit of data. There were some concerns from some of the residents that overnight parking restrictions weren't being enforced, but police department did provide us with some data that shows they had issued 55 citations to vehicles parked on the street overnight. And of those citations, approximately half were warnings only, and that was from 2018 through today. So with that, some alternatives are listed in the case. Alternative one would be to provide consensus direction to staff to continue with the plan as proposed in the letter that was mailed. Second alternative would be to provide consensus direction to staff to install signs in some other manner. Alternative number three would be to provide direction to staff to not install signs and to mail letters to residents informing them that we were not going to move forward with any parking restrictions. And I would just note that staff feels that these restrictions are necessary for safety improvements. Right now, we have, again, received some complaints on the lack of visibility on these streets when you have cars parked on both sides. We also know that our fire department has had issues navigating the streets and that their equipment is, they require 16 feet of width, especially when they're going to put their outriggers out and park and fight a fire. And you do not have that if you have parking on both sides of the street. So that's a high-level overview, and with that, I will stand for any questions.
All right, before we go to questions, we do have some residents here. And are you all together?
Yeah.
Not.
I don't know.
Okay. Would anybody, I have the letter from the three of you at least. Would anybody want to speak on maybe a quick highlight of what you wanted to discuss? I know I can kind of hop to the conclusion. Looks like you have a lot of facts and context here. But you're all here supporting the signs?
We're supporting it. Yeah. I'm not.
Okay. Would you like to speak on that at all? Give any context, maybe, what you've seen? And
certainly. Not opposed to parking restrictions. We feel it is important. My family and other people that I've spoken with feel it is important to have parking on one side of the street. There needs to be, and it is disconcerting to have inability to see children as we come in. We crawl through. But the additional signs, everything is already so close together. Additional signage there makes it even more cluttered. And there does need to be a measure made for those of us who are around the play park circle where the street is additionally narrow. If we have someone coming in to clean carpets, if we have someone coming in to paint or do any kind of trades work on the house, and we do need to keep our houses up, they have nowhere then legally to park. We're one of those houses that has four cars. We play musical cars every morning to get everybody out when they need to go. We don't park on the street. I got a ticket shortly after we moved here 15 years ago. No warning, just a ticket. And I learned very quickly not to park on the street overnight. I'm not seeing that kind of ticketing happen. I saw warnings went out, saw them go up on the streets, but not any actual, I didn't get a warning, I just got a straight up ticket. So very quickly, you know, we fit our cars into the driveway if we don't have enough space. We park things off-site. We had a boat for a good long while. We had a boat, cars were parked elsewhere, or we parked the boat elsewhere so that we could fit everything in. street restrictions. We don't want more signage. And we want the accommodations for the central so that we can have service people not have to park a block away and schlep all their stuff over. It's not fair to ask them to deal with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are your good points. Council, questions you have about what's in front of you? Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Is a majority of this private roads or
no?
No. Just Quicksilver.
So does the HOA itself have any restrictions at all on that kind of stuff? Or is it
just on Quicksilver. Okay. And I believe around the kids' park, it's just one, the green space, it's just one way because that street is so narrow.
Which brings up another point. Are there other solutions like that we could do to make, if they need the additional parking, make it one ways throughout or something, or other types of
question for staff?
We could look at it. I don't know how that would be received by the residents, but
you would still be parking on one side of the road, though.
So this is my neighborhood. I live here. After the 10th person approached me that they did not want these parking restrictions for daytime parking, they all understood that nighttime parking was already established. This was attacking their abilities to park during the daytime. Again, a lot of them do have children that come and go visiting them. They love to have their kids visit them, but again, because our garages are very small, our driveways are not very long, their kids have to park in the street. During the day, they should be allowed to park in the street near the home and not 2 blocks away. Upon that 10 people, there's a petition that went out. We have 38 signatures opposing that this parking restrictions would happen in this neighborhood. And that was only given from the 8th through today. So if there had been more time, I think people being home would have signed that quickly. There was really no... I only met 5 people that were totally for this, that they wanted the parking restrictions. They do emphasize the one corner on 146th Avenue. And on that corner, yes, those college students do come home during the summer, and they do park on the street. Now, whether the police are coming overnight and ticketing them or giving them warnings, that's according to our 7 years that we've, in the last 7 years, only 3.92 tickets actually went out versus all of them being a citation. They were mostly, half of them were warnings, half of them were tickets. Again, those college students have gone back off to college, and we've noticed that, you can drive freely around that corner more now. And I think as the neighborhood develops and grows, it's been 22 years with no restrictions of parking, that I don't think we need to add those restrictions on there. I think that will also influence home values, because if there's nowhere to park, are they going to actually choose that house versus another house in another neighborhood if they can't have people over for holidays or have people over for other festivities in their home? I know the coach in the neighborhood who does lacrosse, he was very disappointed. He coaches, and part of his thing with his teenagers, he has shindigs at his house. And that would hurt his community drive to bring his team together right in our neighborhood. Where would they park? So that is what I have to say about that. And here's the petition if anybody would like it. I had emailed it to Brian and Chris.
I do have a question for you, Shannon, just because you're in the neighborhood. This is not a snapshot of every day, obviously, but going through Google Maps and the drive feature, we can go through the neighborhood. And I don't know what time this is, so this may just be a snapshot. I don't see any cars parking on the street. How prevalent is it? Is both sides of the street needed and full all the time, or is it a sporadic car every couple houses?
It's sporadic. When I would say our neighborhood is fuller during the summer when the college kids are home with their cars. Now, whether they can cram all the cars in their driveway, that's not my job. But it is fuller in the summer. As school had started, after this letter definitely has gone out, I kept watching our neighborhood a little bit more diligently, and it's not packed at that corner that most people are very concerned about, that sharp part of the corner on 146th. It's not. They're at college. They're gone. So, sure, during the holidays, I bet there's going to be more cars there.
I guess my only thought with that is, let's say, fictitious number, the road can hold 200 cars if you park on both sides. So you restrict it to one side so they can only park 100 cars. But there's only 20 cars parking. There's still plenty of space, right?
Not really, because the fire hydrants are on the opposite side of where the parking restrictions are. So we have multiple fire hydrants, we have multiple T sections, and therefore we can't park how many feet from an actual intersection. And I can't remember, is that 16 feet we're not supposed to park to an actual intersection in a neighborhood or anywhere up to a stop sign? So that restricts the other side. And between those driveways on the other side, especially around that corner, we have maybe one parking spot in between each driveway. I did run into a lot of angry neighbors that decided that they do not enjoy having their neighbors park in front of their house, and they should never have a neighbor car park in front of their house. Felt very St. Paulish with that person, I'm not going to lie.
For the staff, was there a reason why we put the parking restrictions on the side that don't have fire hydrants? Mailboxes.
Mailboxes, yes.
Chris and then Kristen.
Well, as Mr. Westby said, when this was presented to Public Works, this seemed reasonable. I've since changed my mind, partly with the outcry of the residents and what they want. 22 years with, I'm going to say maybe one incident, or it was one time, that seems like this is not really a problem that needs to be addressed exactly. However, it also seems like maybe there would be a couple strategic places that it would make sense to not have parking. There's corners, curbs, line of sight. So, Mr. Hagan, Mr. Westby, would we have a small number of spaces that would be, I'll say, critical or crucial that we would suggest?
Councilmember Riley, I can maybe speak a little higher level, and then Bruce can maybe weigh in a little bit more on how we would determine those crucial areas. But, you know, I think that the decision in front of council is really the risk that's out there, right? You know, we touched on the need for the fire truck to have 16 feet. You know, when we met as staff, that was a very pointed question that we wanted to make sure we addressed them. You know, what do you need? In the case of a neighborhood, any neighborhood that has water available, our ladder truck is the first truck out the station, in particular when there's a fire. So that's where the fire trucks are, you know, probably nearly 8 feet wide, and then they put the outriggers out for the support. So, you know, when you start to look at going down this road, can you fit through there? Yes. But, you know, if that house is on fire, you know, ultimately, you want as much space as possible. You're right. There's been very few instances through the years where it's been a true issue. But, you know, I think that's where council needs to weigh in on that risk. You know, if you restrict on some key areas based on identifying the crucial areas, you know, that's good for that area. But if the house is on a straightaway part of the road, you know, you could run into that issue. So those are kind of the two high-level points that I wanted to share. But as far as City Engineer Westby, if there's a mechanism or a criteria that maybe could be used to determine a crucial area, any thoughts on that? Or?
I guess I would just piggyback on the fire department's comments. There's really two main ways they get into the neighborhood off of Sunwood. That 146th Lane, I think that's that corner you're referring to, 146th Lane, 146th Avenue.
That's not the corner I'm referring to. They're talking about it's not a corner. It's just the bend in the road on 146th Avenue. That's the one that seems to be the major concern. Again, those houses are extra close with their driveways. There's not a whole lot of parking between driveways there.
I know when we were talking with the fire department, 146th Avenue, 146th Lane, that corner seemed to be one of their primary concerns. And then also up at Radium and Sodium coming in that way. So that one is, if you have parking, it's congested parking on both sides. They can't make that turn. So can I ask a question as far as mail delivery? Do folks have problems with mail delivery?
I've never had any problems in the last 5 years.
Yeah, a couple of times we haven't gotten our mail because there's been a car parked too close to the mailbox, and the mailman just went on by. So it's only happened a couple of times.
Not often, though, again. So back to Councilmember Riley's point, not a ton of issues out there. Okay.
Other thoughts? Oh, Kirsten?
I just have a few points of clarity. Okay, so everyone over here is okay with the restrictions, but you just don't want the signage?
Yeah, we don't want, they have a different thing than they need to speak. I don't want the signage. I don't want the extra signage and clutter there.
Yeah.
And I would like an accommodation for the people who live around the circle whose street is extra narrow, so the service people, when we need to have them, can park in front of the house and not be ticketed.
Okay. Thank you. The other point of clarity is that the issue we're talking about is specifically more geared towards signage. Like the restrictions already in force or in play since 2003, or can someone clarify that really quick for me?
There's no enforcement mechanism for it out there currently.
But it, exists. It's...
Not to anybody's knowledge.
Okay.
If the signage isn't there, you can't enforce it.
Okay. So I guess...
We made a rule.
It was set up that way, but never...
Okay. So this is more of a comment, but I feel like there's maybe, on occasion, multiple things that are on books somewhere that our city wants to do, but we don't do, and then, we suddenly start trying to enforce it, and it causes confusion, right? So I sympathize with people for this, but I do understand the need for it, and the signage obviously would then provide some clarity for that confusion, so that would make sense that the signage exists. And there's a safety concern here. But when I door knocked for my campaign, I also heard folks that were mostly with the townhomes had some concerns about parking, right? They don't have a lot of spaces. They have smaller garages and things of that nature. So I completely understand that as well. Wondering, speaking to the ability for citizens to potentially communicate with the city on days that they're having service folks out or something of that nature, if they can just say, hey, I know this could cause a lot of communication, and so I'm just trying to think out loud right now, right? But if someone has a plumber coming and they can contact the city and just ask if from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. today, can we not have someone ticket this plumber because they're in front of my house right now? Is that a possibility, right? If there's just open lines of communication with our citizens that are able to, I'm not saying hi, cousin Bob and his 26 kids are here for the next 2 weeks, right? But a plumber, I don't know. Does any of that make sense?
I have a question, or an answer kind of to that. I'm the president of the association, and we did have our board meeting here a couple of weeks ago, and we did meet quorum with a couple of people missing, but we had quorum. And the residents that were here were very excited about the parking restrictions. Now, as far as I wouldn't object to, if Anna needs a plumber, I wouldn't object to them coming to my house as president saying a pass, from 9 to 5, this plumber's going to be here. I wouldn't have a problem, going over there and giving a turn. They can put it on the truck so they aren't tagged.
Yeah.
So the city's not getting all these calls.
Or even
Calling the police department and just saying, hey, yeah. I have this going on in front of my house. Can we park there? Because we can do that if we have neighbors that are relatives that need to stay overnight. We can call and say, hey. And so that seems to work out just fine.
Chief Wommel.
Thank you, Mayor. We do offer the no tag, no tow requests, and we do that quite often. People having a gathering where people are staying overnight, we just ask for a good cell phone number in case there is an emergency with the ability for people to come out and move vehicles quickly so we could get an emergency vehicle through.
I've used that before.
Awesome. Well, I think that clears it up for me, and I appreciate everyone chiming in, and that makes it something that I'm in support of the restrictions and the signage, because there's a lot of other things that we can do to kind of work around it. So,
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I guess I'm kind of wondering, remember, Riley, was we're on public works. I supported the idea of getting feedback, hearing ideas on it. But I think, you know, it's been a place, 20 plus years, and you know, we haven't had any major issues. And so I also just hearing the residents, with the, obviously there's some residents on both sides, but it seems like the petition and things we've heard. So I would assume just keeping it as is without the signs.
Any other questions before start gauging people's interests? No. Anything else to add from staff? Councilmember Riley, where are you at with this?
I would say no more restrictions unless we think there's a couple critical, very strategic spots as mentioned by Mr. Westby, Sunwood and 146th, potentially, if that's a critical area, we limit it to that. If there was another spot somewhere that we say was critical, but otherwise, I would say leave it the way that it is.
So, no enforcement, with the exception of critical areas.
If we decide there are critical areas, yes. I'm flexible as far as that goes, but otherwise I would say no restriction. And we're not talking about overnight at all, because that's right. Always been there and in place.
Councilmember Busher?
I think it might be hard to articulate those specific key point areas, and that'd be hard to enforce, right?
Yellow curb.
And there's just a lot of factors.
Signs.
So then you're okay with signs?
In those specific areas.
Signs, yes. And restrictions in specific areas. Okay. Well, I will just go with the staff members' recommendations.
Councilmember Specht?
Well, we need to state that in favor of not having signs and restrictions.
Oh, sure.
I oppose the parking restrictions.
In totality? To include...
No, not the overnight. I respect
to include the possible blind spots for trucks if deemed by the fire department.
Five % of me would consider that area. Otherwise, after talking to 38 people about this and the beginning of being approached by the first 10, I've had to deal with a lot of human beings and a lot of conversations, and not every house was only a 2-minute talk. So that is where I'm like, I think I will completely oppose at this meeting. Any parking.
Councilor Peters.
Since I've lived in my neighborhood, we've had 2 house fires. The house isn't nearly, one is fully burned down, the other one nearly burned down. I understand the need for having us, those areas that have areas where the fire truck and ladder truck needs to move around. I would agree with the council member Riley on those choke point type areas need to be looked at and agreed upon, but otherwise no other restriction except for, of course,
Councilor Olson.
From a strictly safety standpoint, I think it's it would be good to have the parking restrictions and the whole critical area question. If you had cars parked on both sides of an intersection that a fire truck had to come through, that becomes a critical area if a house is on fire. So I don't know that really washes for me. So I'd be in favor of implementing the restrictions.
Having restrictions?
Doing as planned.
As planned?
Yeah.
Okay. I would fall under the boat of minimal restrictions with the exceptions of the choke points with the fire trucks. I think intersections and blind spots would be important. I do think for safety purposes, obviously, you have intersections restrictions already, but I think that'd be looked at with the fire truck in mind, not just, I'm sure they're already considered with the fire truck in mind, but just having a second look at it. So before I go to official, that's 1, 2, 3, 4.
Excuse me, one moment.
I will make room for one more comment, and then we'll have to continue business. So,
no, shouldn't Shanna abstain because she lives in the area? Correct me if I'm wrong, but...
No, she wouldn't need to abstain. She has no personal benefit or gain from it.
Okay, that's my question. Thank you.
No. But regardless, without Shanna, who has her own version of it, I think there are four versions that match, which is do not restrict the space with the exception of fire lanes, and that would make consensus by the majority. So then the question is to the city staff. The fire department has already gone through this and looked at it and made recommendations kind of in totality for the entire streets. Is there enough information that they've had already gathered that they could identify the worst spots, or do they need to go out there and review it a second time? Would the direction we've given you be enough to...
Yeah, Mayor, I think the direction would be enough to, you know, hone in on the more crucial areas. Mm-hmm. I think we're hearing what the residents are saying. We're on both sides hearing what council's saying. I think it's pretty clear to focus on those crucial areas, and we can look at that. And we'll send out a follow-up letter and kind of explain the reasoning and the idea behind it. And I think it'd also be important to put in that, forget exactly what they call it, but in essence, the exemption through the police department in necessary times, we can share that as well.
The no park or park.
No tag, no tow.
No tag, no tow.
Yep.
Okay, so.
No park, no park.
No park, no park. So you will we'll update the residents, yep, and with the specific areas for safety concerns and the no tag, no tow.
And to clarify, that no tag, no tow would only be allowed. That's the overnight where parking is allowed.
Right.
That wouldn't be this is a definite no parking area.
Right.
That's not an exemption to that area. It's just the more overnight hours where parking is allowed.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we have consensus by the majority. So I think that one is good. Oh, Councilmember Riley.
And then follow up communication to the neighborhood.
He said that.
Correct. Oh,
yep. Okay. We'll send out a new letter, kind of a new timeline. A little bit more information on where we were, how we got here, even a new figure.
All right, moving on to the next item, which is item number 3, update on Charter Commission annual recruitment.
Thank you, guys.
This case is largely just an FYI. Council really has no involvement.
We're going to move to the next case. For everybody that's talking about the previous case, we're moving to the next case. Go ahead, Administrator Hagan.
So largely the council does not have any involvement with the Charter Commission recruitment process, appointing, etc. But within our policy on how we work those recruitments and advertisements, part of it is an FYI or an update to the City Council. So we do have 4 seats up at the end of this year. They're currently held by Ben Deemer, Victor Juma, David May, and Amy Russert. They have all indicated that they would like to reapply to be reappointed to the Charter Commission. We will pass that information off to the judge, who ultimately makes the decision along with advertise. We're through a recruitment process. Anyone who applies kind of through the city, we'll share that information along to the judge as well. A little bit thing, or something that's a little bit unique that I find interesting is someone could apply directly to the judge, and we would really have no idea that that occurred unless they got appointed and you know,
if they were a council member.
That has happened in recent years, not calling that out specifically, but those are kind of the three mechanisms that we recognize to gauge interest on our charter commission. We'll get a letter from the judge with those names, and they'll be appointed to those four seats, reappointed beginning of next year. And you know, the charter is not a super active board by any means. You know, since I've been here, I think twice a year is the most we've met. So again, purely an FYI to you guys, but all I have.
You may have said this, and I may have blanked, and it may have been in here, but I don't want to read through all of it. Does the judge give preference to people reapplying, or can it go any direction the judge wants? I forgot how that works.
The judge has final approval. I do believe part of our policy, I don't have the exact language in front of me, but we do suggest the judge give some weight, whatever that's worth, to someone who is looking to serve a community, understands, I believe, the Constitution or how the city operates, things of that nature. You know, someone who's actually going to be engaged and understand what this role means versus someone who might have said, oh, that sounds interesting, but I know nothing about it.
Sure. Okay. Any other questions or thoughts on that? All right. Well, I think we got through the second one a little quicker than we thought. So we have some time left over. So why don't we go over topics of future discussion, and we can review the future topic calendar as well as the topic request by council members. Anything to add on this one?
I'll just note the next meeting, the rates and fees and charges schedule, that tends to be a little bit of a longer discussion. That schedule is several pages long. I don't think that there's too many major changes proposed this year, but we will go through it, make sure that everyone understands what that means and able to answer any questions related to that. We do have the cryptocurrency ordinance presentation on. I believe that's still scheduled for next meeting. This is more right now just an FYI and what some other cities are doing. It's been largely generated from an uptick in fraud-related cases related to cryptocurrency, particularly to the elder community members and going to ATMs, and ultimately it's pretty challenging to track down those transactions and get their money back. So I think those will be our main two focuses. You know, as we get closer and we think about it more, we may try to add another one in. Like always, this evening we did have one on that just wasn't quite ready, the art plan discussion, but trying to think of anything else. Final budget, we'll start there in the first meeting in November.
Okay. Any discussion on the topics calendar? Chris?
I don't know if it has to go on here, but periodically we have cannabis discussions, but yet I feel like I don't know where we're at with anything that's going on. So could that be an ongoing update, maybe? So that's where I'm saying I don't know that it needs to go on this calendar, but I mean, I know that we're kind of removed from making the decision, but yet ultimately we make the decision. So I guess that's kind of a question.
Well, I think if we will agree to wanting that, it could be as simple as putting it as item number 4 on the work session, which is staff input. Maybe is that a good place to park it? If you have updates for us, you can share them then.
Yep.
Does that work?
That's just fine.
Everybody agrees with that? Okay. You got another one?
Yeah.
Okay, then you'll do you one.
Well, just quarterly fire and police updates. That one to me seems just very, very reasonable that we don't get a lot of updates, and I'm not sure that we need a lot of discussion. Could we just ask for that? I mean, can we all agree that we're asking for that?
Yeah.
Make that our discussion?
Yeah, or do you want to put it back on the same thing as the cannabis during the staff input?
Well, you know, we get like a once a year, like big presentation. I was thinking we could get a quarterly.
Oh, you're saying, okay.
How's the year going?
Yeah, I think we can, I'll admit, our work sessions have been pretty busy lately. Outside of like tonight where we thought we were going to be busy, but is there anything specific you're looking for? Or is it more just kind of a summary of calls that we've seen in the last 3 months? What information are we looking for?
I'm not looking for anything in particular, but, you know, just once a year we hear, like, calls are up 10%. Well, maybe I'd like to hear why is that, you know, in the last quarter, why was it up 12%? Is there an explanation? Is there anything that council can or should do about that? It would also help understand, are we really short on staff, and that helps justify a request, or if there's a short-term need that, you know, council could address, or I don't know. I guess I'm not sure what I'm looking for. It just seems like there's something that could go on, or if we have a real sexy crime go on that you want to describe without incriminating anybody.
You don't have to answer that.
Now you ask.
I'm going to pass on the last one.
When you ask for this, when they do the fire and police update, they put a lot of efforts and do a lot of data analysis and things. Are you saying a toned down version of that, or do you want something that rich every quarter?
Toned down. Verbal update would be fine, or maybe one slide showing a trend in calls.
Yep.
I think I would like this to be a little bit more scheduled, just, you know, Chief Bubbles here very regularly, Ms. Hansen's here very regularly, but as you've noticed, our fire chief is more when needed is here, so I think we'll try to schedule them a little bit more formally than when we have time like this.
But very soon we're going to have a clear second in command for the
fire department,
too. Yep. So. Yep.
And if needed, they would be happy to come.
Kirsten?
Just to add to that piece, just because I was someone that chatted with Chris on that, yeah, I think it would be nice to hear. Maybe there could be, like, information about some of, like, the bigger calls that you guys received in that quarter, and same with the fire department, and kind of speaking to, like, oh, this is maybe a new case type or new type of response that we haven't been seeing previously, that we are now, and this is due to X, you know. Yeah, so we can start thinking ahead of the curve on things that we may need or staff we may need. And then the other thing that I would love to see happen, maybe under staff updates on work session, is where we're at on things that we've previously discussed that we haven't gotten, kind of similarly to cannabis, right? Like, I think we had decided we would be doing check-ins with our community members, our constituents, and we haven't done that. I've personally reached out to Sean to talk about the old town hall, but we haven't had a larger discussion on that, right? Like, there's been some conversations and discussions that we've had, we've made decisions on based on our work sessions that I just haven't seen. And I know it doesn't mean that you're not working behind the scenes. I don't want this to be taken out of context. I love you all, and I think you're all doing fabulous jobs, and I know that when I reach out to you, you give me that information. But would love to be able to make sure that our citizens just kind of see that we're following up on some of the things that we've talked about. So maybe since we're kind of getting to the close of the year, we can review all the work sessions that we've had and just say, you know, what have we come to an agreement on that we should move forward and talk about how we move those forward.
Like an update on outstanding topics?
Yes. Yeah, I think that would be great. And then I think we can, as far as the Veterans Park discussion goes, I think that we had discussed that and kind of are putting that back into the staff slap to, like, figure out what that would look best. We probably could remove it off of the...
Something that could go on the update on
ongoing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Eric?
Wood boilers. EPB had a good discussion and presentation from state on that one, and I don't think that fell off. Am I not reading right?
We did discuss it.
Is that coming back to council?
I thought we were doing, looking at ordinance for that one.
That one was directed.
Yeah, I'll talk to Chris, about it.
Possibly doing an ordinance update.
Yeah, simplifying the ordinance, making it more clear cut and giving some teeth. Like that, at minimum, that should be done, but the ordinance needs to be remedied on that one.
To reflect current standards.
Current standards. And the presentation from the state was very informative. Very informative. I didn't know that much about that equipment, and that was like a cool response.
Anybody else have anything that pops up on them or pops out at them?
Kind of wish that billboard discussion was not all, so we don't have to do it in front of everybody, but. Yeah,
nobody
about it, yeah.
Nobody say anything. Yeah. Anything else? All right. If not, anything else from staff, council, mayor, but Chris?
So we had our variance discussion, like the learning session, whatever that was, last meeting or whatever, and a small amount of that discussed, would council want to essentially either approve or take over the role of approving variances? And I guess that was a kind of a question.
That was left in the air.
Mayor, I interpreted that as direction to prepare an ordinance, and that's going to Planning Commission next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
It was very awkward public hearing.
Yes. So maybe you can throw that in the future topics wish list deal.
I think it's in process.
Presumably that they make a recommendation mm-hmm. at your November meeting.
Okay. All right. If there is nothing else, we will adjourn. Or adjourn. 33 minutes.
You're right.